It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Good morning, Tennessee Valley. You're listening to Tony Mac and the Triplet, the youngest sports radio duo in North Alabama. We welcome you into this soaking wet, slow-moving Saturday. I can promise you that if there's anything that is productive today, it will be this show. So much news to cover from this past week, especially after the hammer was dropped by Pat Forte and Pete Thamel on the college basketball situation. We will have more on that for you in the two-minute drill coming up just shortly. Before we get to that, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, the Triplet part of this whole situation over here, Aaron Triplet. Aaron, good morning, man. How are you?
I'm tired of rain. I'm telling you. I mean, I don't, like I told you as soon as I got here this morning, that I do not remember a Saturday morning in recent memory that I've driven up here and it not been raining, because it rained last week. It rained this week. The week that we were on hiatus, it was raining anyway. I'm pretty sure the week before that it was raining on Saturday. It's ridiculous. I'm about tired of this rain. Of course, it was nice pretty much all week, but on Saturday,
it's too true.
Rain.
Too true. You had to kind of feel like it was coming, though, with as warm as it's been randomly, right? I mean, you kind of had the feeling it was coming.
It felt like the middle of spring so far. You know, it's been 70, almost 80 degrees yesterday.
I was expecting
points this week.
I was expecting a really short Aaron Triplet answer there. When, Aaron, how are you this morning? The way you were coming up to the mic, I was expecting you to just wet. That was something along there. But I'm with you, man. Today I didn't have to drive as far in the rain because I stayed with some friends at last night in Madison, where we were up really late watching the U.S. do something really cool, and we'll get to that in just a second. But yeah, man, too often, every morning, it feels like the last couple weeks I've driven to work in the rain more often than not. And if that's, I mentioned this to you right when you came in, if that's what spring has to offer, if that's what that's going to be about this year, you can go ahead and keep that. Let's just stay in winter, or we can just go ahead and move on closer to summer, but you can keep that rain business. I'm done with that.
Yeah, I don't remember, because earlier this month we had Groundhog Day, and I'm pretty sure that Punxsutawney Phil predicted that we're going to have six more weeks of winter.
Yeah.
Despite
good one.
Despite the fact that I think a lot, because see, he's not the only groundhog that predicts the weather. They have several around the United States. He just happens to be the most famous one. A lot of them picked an early spring, but he did not. More often than not, though, he does predict a long winter, and I actually don't know why that is. A lot of people say it's because of all the cameras that are taking his picture that flash and he sees his shadow. But, of course, he predicts six more weeks of winter. And what does the weather do? At least in Alabama, it goes up to 80 degrees.
Yeah.
And weather did a complete 180 from January.
Alabama said, Phil, you will not tell me how I'm supposed to
act. And I tell you what, in March, we'll have a day we wake up and it's 15 degrees outside.
Kind of looking forward to it at this point, because I don't think my electric bill, my heating bill, was enough these past 2 months. I need it to be even more expensive, so bring on more cold weather. I told my wife, I do get a little upset when the heating or when the electricity bill is really high. It's neither mine or hers fault. I mean, it's just we have to use it. But I told her after the next bill came, I wasn't upset at this point, but when our previous bill came, it was a lot. I've never paid this much for utilities before, but she told me how much it was, and I told her, we've used all the heat for the year. We ran out of heat. There's no more heat in the house, so if it gets cold, we got blankets. We have a heating blanket. We ran out of heat. There's no more heat. We used it all for the year. So there will be no more heat in the McBeth household without contesting that one. But Phil and I, Punxsutawney Phil and I, we have a lot in common. We're both polarizing figures, and we're both often wrong in our predictions. So good job there, Phil. I understand how you feel.
We've actually had the air condition on in our house for most of this week because it's been so hot.
Definitely.
And, I mean, it was odd because
If there's a fan in our house, it's on.
We've had it sitting on, on heat for anywhere from 62 to about 65, and then it got so hot, I was like, I got to turn the air on. I'm sweating in my own home. So I had to turn the AC on, and it's been on for the better part of this week, and it's probably – I'm not going to be shocked if next week I wake up and it's freezing cold because outside it's gone down to 40, and our house is still on air condition.
Yeah, the it's a great feeling when you go to the old thermostat on the wall and you get to click the cool on. There's nothing like it. When you hear it come on and the cold air comes out, it's a beautiful feeling. And my wife is an ice queen. She loves to keep it cold. I always thought I liked to be I was one of those people that liked it cold until I met her, and I had no idea that you can get to that. Your body can get comfortable with that amount of cold. But mine has. I've adapted, and I love being cold. If it gets above like 66 degrees in our house, that's hot. So we like to keep it pretty cool.
Man, the more that I've been around my wife, the more I've discovered that we have become, especially since we got married, we have become more like one another. Because for the longest time, she has always been a very, very cold person, and she doesn't like being cold, so she's always about trying to get warmer. And I have been a hot box for most of my life. But now we got married, we have a house living together, and I've noticed that she's like, oh, is it hot in here to you? And I'm like, no, I'm comfortable. Or I'm like, yeah, it's freezing in here. That's what I'll say. And she'll be like, I'm pretty comfortable. So we've become more like one another in that aspect. It has made it easier to so we're not arguing over how cold or how hot it is in the house. That is a good thing, but I have discovered myself becoming colder on more occasions than I'm used to.
Well, that's mine and Aaron's input on the weather. If you would like to contribute, and let's face it, you should have plenty to talk about today, your voice can be heard by us and the rest of our listeners by dialing 866-485-9867. Of course, we will be done at 10:45 this morning, 15 minutes short, because we got a lot of great things coming up for you, live action on the radio here for you this morning. So you can only get in on the call line for a limited time, but the Twitter window is always open. It'll be open all day long. You can join the conversation there at Tony Mac UMP. That's TonyMacUMP, just like the radio station. Tony Mac UMP, or you can get it Aaron Atrip Tennis. That's ATRIP Tennis. Click the little follow button up there and join the conversation. Tweet us. I'll probably be tweeting about basketball all day, because that's probably what I'll be doing if I'm not, in a coma, since I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. And I'll tell you why here in just a second. Because a few of the other topics we will be discussing throughout the show that may not make it into the four most important stories with the 2-minute drill. But you can weigh in on these stories as well. Auburn basketball will travel to Gainesville tonight to play Florida. On the other side of the state, Alabama will be hosting Arkansas. They're going to try to stop the bleeding there. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And Aaron and I, it seems like our predictions are coming true for Alabama basketball. But we differ just slightly in our predictions. Aaron, you predicted them to win both of their home games and then lose the road games. I predicted they wouldn't win another game on the road. But I said they would win, they would drop a home game. I didn't specify who, so I feel like I need to make that prediction today since you were specific with yours. I'll make that later. But I think they do drop a home game. And because I really want my prediction to be true now. I want Alabama to make the tournament, don't get me wrong, but I want them to be on the bubble going into the SEC tournament, because that was my prediction, and I do think they ultimately get in. But I know our friend Jordan thinks that if they win one more game, because no matter what game they win remaining on their schedule, it's a pretty good win for them, that they would be in. But now I'm starting to hear a lot of things similar to my original thought is, if they only win one more game and it's at home and then lose the rest, they're in jeopardy of making the tournament, and they'll have to do something in the SEC. So we'll talk about that in just a second, or here in just a little bit. That's always going to be a fun topic there. But also, U.S. men's curling won the gold medal last night, or early this morning, with Matt Hamilton, everybody's favorite superstar right now. He's only 29 years old. I found that out last night. He looks a lot older than that, so that gave me hope to get back in the old ice skating ring for some curling. I would love to do that if ice liked me. Ice does not like me at all. But I would love to go in there and try to curl. I didn't realize those rocks of granite were like 42 pounds. So that'd be an adjustment. I really just want to slide around on the ice. I have no desire to really like push the rock and twist the rock. I just want to push off that little thing and slide around on my shoes, because it looks really fun.
I tell you, ice in general, the ice skating concept is so difficult. I've only been ice skating about two or three times in my entire life, and it's horrible. If you've never gone ice skating before and you try and you think, hey, I want to go try ice skating, don't. It is.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Oh my gosh. I've been ice skating, like officially ice skating once, and I about broke my ankles every time I could actually stand up, and I had a blast. I loved it.
I don't like it. Those skates hurt my feet, and it is almost impossible to stay up. And if I am able to like get up to a speed where I'm not, where I'm, you know, can actually feel a breeze against me and I'm not against the rail, that's an accomplishment. And it's just it makes you really appreciate what people do in the National Hockey League and on the figure skaters and the speed skaters and all that, because just trying to do it is ridiculous. If you've never done it before, it's so difficult.
You're exactly right. The funny thing about that is I don't even watch and appreciate how crazy good they are at just skating and doing the crazy tricks they do, because I think that's obvious. I'll sit there and appreciate some of the really small things when I watch them and think about me trying to ice skate, like how they can just stand still and walk on the ice as if they're walking on actual land, and how they can go backward, all of a sudden change direction forward to backwards. I don't get that. I don't know how you can stand up, let alone do all that. So it's really impressive, all of that stuff. And also, one more story we'll get to. This one's not as fun as U.S. winning curling gold, but ex-Miami offensive lineman Jonathan Martin, he had a really, really concerning Instagram post yesterday. You might remember him from the Richie Incognito thing. What was that, 5 years ago, 2013? Late 2013?
Yes, it was
so like
fall
four and
2013
a half,
that was going on.
4.5 years ago that was happening. He is, spoiler alert, has not gotten better from his depression, it seems like. So we'll get into that here in just a little bit. Really, really concerning stuff there. But Aaron, I think it's about time for quickly becoming my favorite segment, and it should be everybody else's favorite segment. It is time for the best recap in radio. It is the 2-Minute Drill.
Now, it's time for the best recap in radio, the 2-Minute Drill. 2 minutes on the clock. Number 4.
Adam Silver and the NBA are kicking around ideas that would change the playoff format in a significant way. The NBA has always been a league subject to change and to try out new ideas. In recent moves, they have changed the weight of the draft lottery. They've even tampered with the NBA All-Star Game. However, this would be huge to mess with the playoffs. The two proposals include a playoff that would take the top 16 teams in the entire NBA as opposed to the top 8 from each conference. The idea is that you get the best 16 teams in the playoff as opposed to having teams in that are in just because of a weak conference. This could provide more interesting first-round matchups, which could overall improve our intrigue in the playoffs in any round before the finals. The other is more college basketball-oriented, as the idea is centered around a play-in format for the 7 through 10 seeds, where they would go at it for the final 2 seeds in the playoffs. Essentially, the 1 through 6 seeds are a lock, and the 7 would play the 8, and the 9 would play the 10. The winner of the 7 and 8 seed would automatically get the 7 seed, while the loser would play the winner of the 9 and 10 seed for the final playoff seed. While that sounds fun, it would only bring intrigue for just a second, since you would expect that seed to get beat out rather quickly. But the higher seed in the official first round of the playoffs, if they tinker with it at all, the single bracket with the 1 through 16 best teams in the NBA is probably the best bet, since more Western Conference teams would probably get in. And let's face it, the West is better because that's where the majority of the superstars are. Plus, letting 7 out of the 7 through the 10 seeds have a chance to get in basically allows 20 out of 30 teams in the playoffs. That's two-thirds of the league. 82 games is enough to decide which teams should get in. We don't need a play-in game as well. The last thing we need to do is extend a playoff system that already feels like it takes a lifetime. Improve the quality, not the quantity.
Number 3.
Feeding off some of the NBA, earlier this week, we saw an SI article drop diving directly inside the disgusting culture of the front office of the Dallas Mavericks. In particular, former team president Terdima Usery. Usery has been accused by multiple former female employees of sexual misconduct in the workplace. Stories range from just 9 comments to downright disgusting acts. Usery has come out and denied all allegations brought against him. But what may be the bigger question is, what level of knowledge does owner Mark Cuban have? Cuban was never named as a perpetrator by one of the victims, but arguably the most well-known owner in all professional sports, one who prides himself on being hands-on, involved in his franchise, had to have some knowledge of the atrocious acts going on right under his nose. One would think, anyway. Now, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver faces the biggest decision of his career. Silver has been praised for his progressive policies in the NBA, especially his handling of the Donald Sterling incident. But let it be known, Mark Cuban is no Donald Sterling. Mark Cuban, as I said before, is the most well-known owner of all professional sports, one who has even expressed interest in running for president of the United States. If any owner in professional sports has ever become an icon, in air quotes, if you want to call it that, it's Mark Cuban. So this makes the problem facing Silver in the NBA much bigger. What will they do? Will they make a mistake like the NFL and Roger Goodell did with Ray Rice? Will they make a complete disaster of the entire situation? Or will Silver and the league be able to rise to the occasion and make the best decision and set a precedent to try to stop these sort of things from happening?
Number two.
The Louisville Cardinals basketball program officially had their appeal denied, which officially ends only one of the problems the program has self-inflicted on themselves in the last 6 years. The denied appeal was in reference to the escort scandal, where a former assistant was hiring women to come in and strip and even have sex with some of the prospects that were considering attending Louisville. The big story to come from the denied appeal is that they were stripped of 123 wins spanning the 2011-2012 season all the way through the 2015 season, where those players were deemed ineligible. And yes, that does include the back-to-back Final Four seasons and the national championship. They will also pay back all of the conference revenue they received for those tournaments, which what I hear is from in between $600,000 to $15 million. We will go further in depth with this later on in the show, but that is the bigger punishment, right? You penalize what they are allowed to do going forward and make it harder than the average team to be successful, and you hit them in the pocket. That is a punishment, not stripping away wins and titles. We all saw those games. You can't take those experiences away from our minds, so to all of us, vacated or not, Louisville won those matchups. Also, let's not forget that this problem finally being solved doesn't make Louisville's troubles go away. They aren't all of a sudden better. They are still feeling the aftermath of another problem. The FBI probe that started in September nabbed them as one of the original offenders that cost them a coach, a player, and an athletic director. They are considered to be on the bubble as of now, which is a good start. But does that mean this problem is over? There's no telling what's still in the closet from the guys before them. Also, don't forget, as honest and sincere as the new guys seem, they did just fire one of the best liars I've ever seen in sports. Didn't Pitino adamantly deny knowing about the strippers and not being involved in the paying player scandal? What did he get popped for?
And finally, number one.
We knew it was coming. We just had no idea when. The FBI dropped its list of numerous universities involved in NCAA violations and numerous players and former players accused of receiving improper benefits. Current players include Michigan State's Miles Bridges, Duke's Wendell Carter, Kentucky's Kevin Knox, and Alabama's Colin Sexton, just to name a few. There have also been several former players listed in the report, such as Kentucky's Bam Adebayo and LSU's Tim Quarterman. Schools such as Arizona, Clemson, NC State, South Carolina, USC, Utah, LSU, and Wichita State have all been listed in the report. Multiple head coaches at various universities have stated they aren't surprised by the report, all knowing that this goes on frequently right under their noses of the NCAA and the fans. It also broke late last night that Arizona coach Sean Miller was caught on an FBI wiretap discussing a $100,000 payment for recruit DeAndre Ayton. But not every coach such as Miller has been involved. There are many rogue boosters conducting pay-for-play schemes with today's recruits. Regardless of where the money comes from, NCAA President Mark Emmert says that if everything is true, then the systematic failures must be fixed if we want college sports in America. Attorney Don Jackson, who has worked with eligibility issues before, says it can be fixed if players are compensated. ESPN's Jay Billis, a firm believer in pay-for-play, called out the college football landscape in wake of the scandal. He says that if people don't believe this is going on in football right now, you're either painfully naive or just willfully blind. There's definitely a level of ignorance if you think basketball is a corrupt business, but football is clean and by the book. But what will come of this investigation? It's very possible we could see the landscape of all college sports, football, basketball, anything, changed forever because of the break in this scandal.
Absolutely insane what's going on right now in college basketball. I mean, we were expecting it. They said that this was going to be something of the likes of which we've never seen. The college basketball landscape would be changed forever. They said that back in September when this originally broke, and it just kind of left us all waiting, and we really wanted to know more. And then even last week they teased it. We talked about it here on the show. They teased it more and more, and they finally let a little taste of it get out yesterday, and it left everybody confused yesterday morning, thinking, okay, well, we see who's getting paid, but what's that going to do? These players that got away with it, like Kyle Lowry and Bam Adebayo, guys like that actually receive money and are already in the NBA. This comes out after they're in the NBA. They're not in any trouble. Nothing can happen to them. They were given a loan. And as far as we know of the reports yesterday morning, the schools really weren't, they didn't give any proof of the schools being responsible for those kids taking the money. So the only thing you could really do was deem those players ineligible, go back and take those wins away from them. That was until Pat Forty and Pete Thamel let out another, you know, they're taking over the Woj bomb yesterday is what they did, because they dropped that yesterday at 4 a.m. and then they, again last night around 11, they put the nail in the coffin and came out and really started to tie some of these assistant coaches into basically trying to trade players. What they were trying to do is they were trying to trade. They caught Michigan State doing it. We'll talk about it more after the break, but they're trying to trade. Michigan State in particular was one of them. An assistant coach was trying to offer a trade, saying if you get Bryce Bowen, who we all know went to Louisville and is now at South Carolina after he got in trouble at Louisville, if you give us Bryce Bowen, if Bryce Bowen comes to Michigan State, I'll trade you these guys, essentially saying these guys will sign with your agency. These two guys will sign with you if Bryce Bowen will come over here. And that this article was just about Bowen, about the majority of teams, like Arizona. Arizona was one of them trying to get to Bryce Bowen. Can you imagine? That's just one player. So if that many schools were involved in this one guy, this thing is going to get insane. I mean, Arizona, they just got in trouble. I mean, their head coach is in a lot of trouble now, and it had nothing to do with this guy. It has to do with the guy they actually got, DeAndre Ayton. They paid him $100,000, or supposedly Miller accepted that money to give to him. This thing's insane. That's just one dude, and we still haven't gotten into the blue bloods that we're all thinking, the Kentuckys, the Dukes. It's coming, man, and I don't think this thing's anywhere close to being over, because they're still going through emails and over 3,000 hours of phone calls, so we'll get there. Probably going to happen after a break, though. We got to get to a break. We'll come back. We got a lot of this to react to, plus much, much more. You can do that. 866-485-9867 is how you can get in to talk to us directly. At Tony Mack, UMP is how you can get to me on Twitter. At A Trip Tennis is how you can get to Aaron. Hit that follow button if you're going to tweet at us. We'd really appreciate that. Oh, goodness. As the acid reflux is finally starting to catch up to me and kick my butt this morning, we're going to take a break. It's Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 1039, The Ump. Stay tuned, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet on this soaking wet Saturday morning. Just because it's slow moving out there for everybody else does not mean the sports world is doing that for you. So we got a lot of stuff you guys can react to. Man, this week has been crazy. Yesterday in particular, wild, wild day for college basketball. 866-485-9867. That's how you get in. You can talk to Aaron and myself and the rest of the Tennessee Valley here. Youngest sports radio duo in the Tennessee Valley, and up here in North Alabama. So let us know what you're thinking. At Tony Mack, UMP, at A Trip Tennis. That's how you get at us on the Twitter window. Don't be afraid to hit that follow button. All right, Aaron, let's talk about some of these things. I mean, I love the two-minute drill because it is a fantastic format where you get enough time to tell everybody the most important things, or four of the most important things, maybe not the most important things, because I feel like some of the stuff that happened yesterday or late last night is really important as well. But four of the most important things of the week, we get a chance to tell everybody a little bit about that and then expand on it throughout the show. So let's do a little bit of that. Let's start with the NBA playoff format that Adam Silver is considering tinkering with. Now, we've heard in the past that he's considered doing the 16-seed thing, the 1 through 16, instead of having the 8 teams of each conference. And now it seems like they're picking up steam. And they're saying there's a lot of momentum behind both of these playoff formats, but I don't know how you feel about doing a 1 through 16 seed deal, but it's got to be the better option. If they're going to tinker with the playoffs, it's got to be the better option than doing this play-in thing, right?
Yeah, I don't like that. I think that's a stupid idea. Well, I
agree with you, and I'll tell you why I think that. I mean, there might be I think what they had in mind is that nobody's really locked into the playoffs until the finals because of what we have right now. You know who's going to make it, basically. I mean, Houston might push Golden State a little bit right now, but they're a run-and-gun three-point shooting team, and they can get cold any day of the week, and that could be a momentum-changing game, the game they get cold. So it's probably going to be Golden State. Most likely now it's going to be Cleveland after their move. We don't know, but probably. You know what I mean? So, especially in the Eastern Conference, the first couple of rounds aren't that good because the teams really aren't that good. They get in the playoffs because of the format that says, hey, the 8 best teams in this conference, no matter how bad they are, they get in. All the superstars are in the West. So their idea behind it is to make some of this stuff more intriguing, draw more interest. But here's the deal. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Aaron, but let's say the 7 seed beats the 8 seed, okay? And the 10 seed beats the 9 seed. And then the 10 seed beats the 8 seed to get in. So you got the 7 seed as the actual 7 seed, but the 10 seed is the 8 seed. What happens to the 7 seed? They get obliterated by the 2 seed, and then the 10 seed gets annihilated by the 1 seed. It immediately goes away. That little intrigue of the play-in game means nothing because you know after that play-in game, they're going to go play two of the better teams in the conference, and they're going to get beat. They're going to get beat handily. So the intrigue automatically goes away, and I think if you're going to go after it, I think the better option is to just seed these guys 1 through 16. I mean, they might have to alter things a little bit as far as division games and stuff like that because all that's centered around, making the playoffs out of two conferences. But if you want to go 1 through 16, that's a format I can get behind because that's putting the 16 best teams in the playoffs where some of these teams in the West that don't get in, that have superstars, they may not be great as a team, but wouldn't you kill to see Anthony Davis play 4 more games in the playoffs rather than Andre Drummond struggle for Detroit or something like that?
Absolutely, and the main problem is that too many teams get into the playoffs anyway. There's too many teams that get into the playoffs. There's not 16 playoff-quality teams in the NBA, period. Which is why you get these terrible first-round matchups that are just going to be sweeps. They're just playing 4 games to play 4 games. It's ridiculous. There are too many teams in the NBA playoffs, number one. Number two, you're exactly right. The playing games would only be for the right to get swept in the first round by the top 2 teams in the conference. So I think that's really obsolete and just adds more games to an already season in the NBA that's, number one, too long, and playoffs that are also too long, and that's just a ridiculously too long season. So I don't think there's a – what I would do is I'd cut down the amount of teams that get into the playoffs. But that's not going to happen because there's too much money to be made in having 16 teams get into the playoffs. However, I don't know how much money could possibly be made by watching the Warriors sweep the Jazz out of the opening round or whatever the case may be. And now it would be the Warriors are technically the 2 seed right now, so they'd be playing the Trailblazers.
Well, if you do 1 through 16, it'd be a little different, and that's what I like. Also, you have the potential – we'll get to that in just a second – but you have the potential of – finally having the 2 best teams meet in the finals. You know, sometimes in all sports, you know, you can get to like the semifinal game and it turned out to be better than the national championship game or the NBA finals or something along those lines. You have sometimes teams in the same conference that are better than what's going to come out of the other conference. You have conference champions playing in the championship, not necessarily the 2 best teams as always. And I think you're writing down what I hope you're writing down, and that's you're seeding these teams correctly, which would be a big help. But you have the potential now of whenever, let's say in the West, let's say Golden State and Houston are the two best teams in the NBA right now. They won't meet in the conference finals, or the semifinals, rather, anymore. They would be in, they would meet in the actual finals. Because as of right now, Houston would be the one seed, and they would play Miami in the first round. And Houston probably blows them out, but I still think there's a better first round matchup in New Orleans taking on, Golden State. They play Golden State. That would be a lot of fun to watch because they played a few years ago. You would see Anthony Davis. That's star power right there. Now, I know they're in the West, but you'll still get those cross matchups, and you're seeing this up. But I like that idea, not just as a better option than the play-in deal, but I actually like that option, period. I would love to see you run a lot of risk changing the playoff format just to try something out, so it would really have to work in order to try it out and keep it going, because you can't really try something like that out and go back to East and West. That would really devalue what happened that one year. It would devalue the playoffs. That it's something you can just change around at will. So if you change, it has to be a good one. But I think this could potentially be a good one, especially if this is how the NBA is going to continue, where all of the star power lies in the West. I mean, think about the superstars you have in the East. It's really not that many. I don't consider DeMar DeRozan a superstar. He's an all-star. He's very good, but I don't think he's a superstar, and nor is Kyle Lowry. But on Boston, Kyrie Irving is a superstar. Al Horford is not. Al Horford is an all-star. I'm not sure that – I don't know if you would consider Gordon Hayward a superstar, but he's a star. But you've got – so basically right now you've got Kyrie Irving. You've got LeBron James in Cleveland. And, John Wall's hurt. You got Giannis, the freak. And then some rising stars on Philadelphia's team. Blake Griffin is now a superstar in Detroit, but he's getting his legs about him. I mean, it's thin, it's slim over there. But then you go to the West, and just in the top two teams, think about all the stars you got, the superstars you got. You got Chris Paul. You got Kawhi Leonard, but he's hurt. You got James Harden, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Some of those may be just all-stars there. But then in Minnesota, you got Jimmy Butler, who's a very, very good player. Russell Westbrook, Paul George. Karl Anthony Towns is really starting to make a name for himself. Anthony Davis. The superstars and all the better guard plays all in the West. You mix it up that way and have the top 16 teams play each other, it's better. It feels like the talent is more spread out instead of having the West overloaded with talent. And it kind of hurts a little bit anyway, because Anthony Davis and some guys like that are the best part of their team and they're not going anywhere.
Something that I noticed, I just seeded them 1 through 16 according to record. There's 9 teams from the West and 7 teams from the East. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty even, as it seems, with one more team from the West.
But that's
if it were to end today. If it were to end today, exactly. But it's just a hypothetical. And just looking at this list, I actually would like this.
It would be fantastic.
It would be a lot of fun, I think. It would
rattle it off. Who would be the 116?
Well, the Rockets would be the one seed right now. The Warriors is the 2, the Raptors 3, Celtics 4, Cavs 5, Spurs 6, Wizards 7, Pacers 8, Timberwolves 9, Thunder 10, Bucks 11, Nuggets 12, Blazers 13, Pelicans 14, the Sixers 15, and the Clippers are the 16. I matched them up. The best matchup, one of the best matchups I see is the 7-10, which is the Wizards and the Thunder, would be an exciting. I think that'd go 7. Probably 6 or 7, I think. I'd probably take the Thunder in that one.
And you guys might be thinking, well, John Wall's hurt. They've been fantastic without him.
So exactly.
And about
playoff time, is he supposed to come back for? Is he out for the year?
I honestly can't remember how he.
I don't
got
remember
hurt.
Either.
But I mean, you have Otto Porter and Bradley Beal there. You know, they're still a pretty good team.
They're playing great basketball right now. And then of course, the Raptors will be playing the Pelicans. So the star power on both teams there would be fantastic to see also.
I mean, you're still going to get the 116 and the 215 blowouts, but you have in the middle there better matchups. You're not just waiting for the finals anymore. You've got intrigue there. You know what I mean?
And you could see, mate, well, what do you think the Sixers could get a game off the Warriors with all the young talent? I mean, I know that get one game, maybe. They'd probably get swept, but it'd be interesting to see. They've got a lot of young guys. Another one that I'm looking at, the Celtics and the Trailblazers. I mean, that's Kyrie and Damian Lillard going at it in the first round.
That would be an incredible matchup. So not only is this a better format than it's the better option than the play-in deal, but this is just a good format, period, and I hope finally picks up some steam. But another one they were talking about is integrating these. They were talking about doing the 1 through 16, but having those final few slots as play-in slots. Leave the play-in thing out of it.
Yeah, I don't agree. I think that's trying to become too much like college basketball, which I don't like the play-in games in college basketball in the NCAA tournament anyway. I think those are stupid. But
you have 82 games to figure this out.
Why play anymore?
Exactly. I mean,
it makes the NBA regular season less significant.
At game 82, I don't care if you're – I mean, I know we've had this in the past, but I don't care if you're – like on your team number 10 or 9 and you're coming off like a 10 or 11 game winning streak, kind of like what Utah had done before they lost last night. You're coming off a 10 11 game winning streak. After 82 games, you are who you are. You don't deserve to get in, because you might have this miracle run and squeeze into the playoffs, but you're not going to go and beat the best team. As if you get in as one of the final two seeds, you're not going to go on and beat one of the best two teams in the league in four games. You're not going to beat them four times out of seven. It's just not going to happen. I don't care how hot you've gotten. You're not going to do it. You are who you are at that point. 82 games is enough. And I don't want it to be like baseball. They play 162 and then like one game playoff to get into the playoffs. We don't need that.
The wild card game in baseball is the most ridiculous thing almost in sports. Baseball did everything. Like, they have their regular season is absurd. Their regular season is way too long. But for the longest time, they did the playoffs right. Only 8 teams out of 30 got in. And that's good. I mean, that's 8 quality teams. You get your 3 division winners and your 1 wild card team. But now, with this wild card game, you have a team that is clearly, clear-cut, the top wild card team, like 8 games above the second place spot. And that team could lose that one game, and it be done. And it makes 162 games come down to one game for those two teams. It's ridiculous.
You're exactly right, and that's a great comparison. And just think about this. You already have 16 teams in the NBA getting in, and if you were to include the 9 and the 10 seeds vying for a spot as well, that's 2 from each conference, that's 20 teams trying to get in the playoffs. Now, I understand that those play-in games technically probably wouldn't be considered playoff games. They wouldn't be considered part of the first round, but think about it. After 82 regular season games, you still have 20 of the 30 NBA teams playing postseason basketball. That's 66% of the entire NBA. That devalues the regular season that a lot of people already feel like is devalued.
Completely, completely. And I mean, the fact that over half the teams in the league get into the playoffs is ridiculous. There's not that many good teams.
And now we're talking about
now
we're potentially talking about 20 teams playing postseason basketball.
It's unreal. The NFL does it probably the best way. They have 12 of their 32 teams get into the playoffs, so that's less than half, because half of 32 is 16, so 4 teams less get in.
Solid math there.
And
solid.
Hey, I can do math.
What is that? What is that, 12 out of 32? What's the percentage there? We're looking at what?
I don't know if I'm not that good at math.
Okay, let's see. We can figure this out. 4 goes into 12 3 times. 4 goes into 32, what, 8 times? So 3/8, I don't know what that is.
Well, 12 goes into 36 3 times.
Yeah, but there's only 32 teams.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to narrow it down.
So 4 goes into 12 3 times. That's 3 on your front half of your fraction. And then 4 goes into 32 8 times. So it'd be 3/8, but I don't know what that turns out to be in a fraction. So, but that would be your percentage of teams getting into the NFL playoffs. As opposed to right now, you have more than 50%, and you're talking about potentially 66. So it's absurd. I like how the NFL does it. You don't play too many games. You leave us wanting more.
It's 38%.
See? There you go.
38%.
That's solid.
And It really is. And in fact, they do it where they make the regular season games matter by making you win your division. If you win your division, which of course you play each team twice, you win your division, you get in the playoffs. And some people don't like that, but I do, because it makes winning your division mean something, like it does in baseball. However, some people don't like the way they seed it all the way down, because sometimes you'll have a team who comes in second in their division who ended up 12-4 behind a team that went 14-2, and have a team that went 9-7 win a division. They have to travel to that team. I'm kind of on the fence about that. I'm not going to be upset either way if they were to change that. I don't think they're going to change that anytime soon.
Yeah.
But I'm perfectly fine with that.
When you have that few teams getting in, think about the quality of that sport you have to play every single week just to get in. I mean, the wild card teams more often than not are what, like 10-6? A lot of the times you'll get wild card teams. That's four games more that you won than you lost, and in a small season compared to the NBA and the NFL or the MLB. But you win four more games than you do lose games, and you're barely squeaking into the playoffs. In the NBA, you have a 500 record, you're in easy. So,
and this is not just talking about the NBA. I mean, the NHL does it too. To me, I mean, the NHL's format is essentially the exact same way as the NBA. They play 82 regular season games, and then 16 teams over half the league get in the playoffs. Of course, now they have 31 teams, still over half the league. And they do it to where the top three teams in each division, there's four divisions, the top three teams go in each division plus two wildcard teams in each conference, and then they kind of seed them in a different way to where, like, divisions can't match up with each other to the second round or something like that. And it's too many. They should, I think the NHL should shorten their season where less teams. I would be fine with 12 teams getting into the playoffs in the NHL, because
I don't know if you'd be able to do that, though, just because of the parity that we talked about beforehand.
We did talk about parity. Before the show, we talked about the amount of parity.
How many times have we had an 8 seed go to the final? I mean, the Kings did it once, right?
The Kings did it once. The Preds did it last year.
The second to the last team
to
get in.
So that's difficult to do, but it's still too long, and it's still too many.
Fair.
But it's a different game, however. It's hard because it's a different game than basketball. In basketball, if you have the five best players on the court, you're going to win the basketball game. It's much easier to basketball is a much easier sport to dominate. Hockey and baseball are a little different because it's about playing well at the right time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're playing well in the NBA and you're a hot team and you run into a team with better players, you're going to get swept.
Right.
But if you're hot in hockey or baseball and you run into a team that's better, you got a chance to beat them because that's the way the sport is. So that's where it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. We're running out of time in this segment. We got to get to a quick break. We're already a little over. But the strengths of every professional league has their own strength. And we'll talk about those here in just a second on the other side of the break. And we'll also get your final verdict on the playoff format, Aaron, because you are way more of a hard ass when it comes to stuff like this than I am. I like, you know, change and stuff like that more than the usual person. I like experimenting, so I've got to get the opinion of somebody who has a hard opinion on it. So we'll get back to that here in just a second. Right after the break, Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 1039, The Ump.
730 and 1039, The Ump. More sports. Sports Radio 730 and 1039, The Ump. WUMP.
Welcome back. Tony Mack in the Triple here. 7:30, 1039, The Ump. Sun's actually coming out at 9:53 on this Saturday morning. I don't know how soaking wet it'll be when we leave. I hope it's a better drive home than it was here, because it's a lot longer of a drive home for me than it was to get here. But Aaron, real quick, we don't have too much time, a few minutes here in this segment. So final verdict, the whole playoff format thing, this seeding everybody 1 through 16 as opposed to the play-in. I think we both favor that format over that, but just as a playoff format going forward, period, as opposed to the format we have right now, is this 1 through 16 thing a better idea?
I think it is, just because it simply provides some more intrigue. It makes, you know, there's more, you know, motivation to get to win more games. There won't be as much sitting, I don't believe, and resting, because this will make teams, you know, want to play more games, or winning more games more important. But yeah, I think that's the better way to go. I don't think it's going to happen at least this next season, or maybe in the season after that, but maybe soon some change will come.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, looking at this year's, it still looks like it would be really fun. But I'm sure I would challenge us to do it, but I'm sure we could go back the last couple of years and look about how that format would go. And it would probably, we'd look at some of those matchups and say, wow, that would have been really cool to see, as opposed to the Celtics getting in at under 500. This matchup might have been better or something like that. I think that if you go back and look more and more at that, at some of the seasons past, I think we'd be even more in favor of it. But I'm 100% behind that. But like I said, if you're going to tinker with the playoff format, that's the strongest case you have, is that format, because that's a format that has staying power. And you run the risk of devaluing the NBA playoffs if you show that you can change it, it not work out, and then change it back. If you can sit there and change the most important part of the NBA season over and over again, it really starts to devalue that process and that entire system. So you really have to make sure it's a home run and has some staying power before you do that, which I absolutely think this format does. We got so much more to get into on the other side of this break. We can talk a little bit about this Louisville situation. We're definitely going to touch on Jonathan Martin's concerning Instagram posts. And we're definitely going to get into the college basketball stuff more here in just a minute. This is Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 1039 The Ump. Thank you so much for joining us this Saturday. About 45 more minutes to go. Stay tuned, everybody. We appreciate it. We'll be back after the break.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet. Again, it was a soaking wet Saturday, but now I'm trying to turn around. The window is behind me. Sun's starting to peek out there, Aaron. Wonderful. Great. I don't know what's going to upset me more, the fact that it was raining or the fact that now it's going to be really nasty and humid. The thing I hate the most in this entire world is humidity. I can't stand it. And it looks like that's what we're going to have to deal with. So I guess I'll have to get in my car and turn my AC on and drive home. Oh, the shame, the horror, but I'm excited because you know what this warm, weird, inconsistent Alabama weather means? It means we're just that much closer to March, and damn, I'm ready to fill out a bracket, man. I don't know, I've got the itch so bad to fill out a bracket and get really upset at it being awful, but I just cannot wait to pencil in Winthrop and Loyola Chicago being your one seeds and making a run, because it seems like that's all that's going to be left of eligibility once we finally figure all this stuff out. Because as you touched on in the 2-minute drill, there was the insanity of what's going on in college basketball. And I you almost sound like you have to defend it when you say this, but even for the Blue Bloods now, even for the Blue Bloods, if I were to come in, let's say I was Coach Cal coming to Kentucky. If I was Coach Cal coming to Kentucky, even though I'm a head coach that is very highly touted coming in, and I'm about to coach Kentucky, one of the biggest Blue Bloods in college basketball history, you're still at a disadvantage if you want to come in and run your program clean. Am I wrong there? Like, Coach K or Roy Williams, Aaron, them going into their respective programs, being as respected of head coaches as they are, and they came in and they wanted to run this thing completely clean, they would be at a disadvantage. Even the best of the absolute best in basketball has to cheat to be successful. You were 100. It doesn't matter where you are. What school you're at in college basketball does not put you at a disadvantage. Or you are at a disadvantage. No matter where you go, you are at a disadvantage if you are not willing to pay to get players or give them some kind of benefit to set them up for the NBA. That's just the cold reality that college basketball has been. That is the culture. However long ago this started, I don't know how long it's been around, but that is the cold reality that you have to cheat. And if you come in and you expect your job at college basketball to be coaching amateur athletics, you automatically set yourself up for failure, and you're behind the program. Because as we've seen, the underbelly of this college basketball thing, amateurism is imaginary. I mean, the amateur athletics does not exist. We like to say it does officially because we officially don't pay these players, but they're getting it anyway. The people that actually handle these guys, they know it's not the athletics is not amateurism. College athletics is not amateur athletics. And if you think that as a coach, you put yourself at a disadvantage. You have to cheat in order to be successful in college basketball these days. And I know saying all that makes it sound like I'm advocating it. I'm absolutely not. Obviously, nobody likes cheaters. But that's just the culture that college basketball has created. And you go back and look at all these documents with everybody coming out this and that. This guy did this. This guy got that amount of money. And this guy got that amount of money. We're really looking at these guys, like Kentucky being one of them, because Bam Adebayo last year got money. This year, Kevin Knox had dinner with an agent. We don't know who paid for what, so that may not be anything. But at the very least, those wins last year that Bam played in, they have to be taken care of, right? But now the question comes, when do we take care of this? The payers that are being paid this year, like Arizona, you can already tell. You can already tell this one's clear cut. Arizona and is it Sean Miller? I always get him and his brother confused. Sean Miller, Arizona, and DeAndre Ayton. You expect that ruling to come out before the tournament. He's going to be ineligible. Miller's probably going to get fired. And Arizona is going to be at a big disadvantage. I don't know if they disqualified them from the tournament, but you will see DeAndre Ayton not playing. But what about these other guys? What about the Michigan State thing? How quickly do we see this get fixed? Michigan State had an assistant coach. I can't remember his name, but they had an assistant coach willing to trade players to get these players to sign with an agency, saying, these guys will sign with you. I will make sure they sign with you if you get us this guy. They ended up not getting that guy, so I don't know if those players ever did anything with them, but the promise was there. The intention was there. Number one, can you get in trouble for that? I would assume so. And number two, how quickly does that happen? Do they let Michigan State, with what they have now, go through the tournament with all the guys they have and then get it taken away later like Louisville did? But we know it before the tournament. So do we put an end to all this, well, yeah, they're winning now, but they're going to take it away in the future? Or do we finally just drop the hammer and say, look, you, everybody involved in this report that did something wrong, you're either disqualified or the players that were involved are disqualified, so we can have the more legitimate tournament, even though it may not be great quality because of all the guys that will be disqualified. But are we going to have an actual legitimate tournament this year? Because I feel if all this information can keep coming out. It can come out all it wants to. But the point is, or the question remains, when are they going to start acting on it? When are they going to start punishing these guys? And if you go through with this tournament, I don't know if I can enjoy it as much. I mean, I'm going to have fun watching it, but in the back of my mind, you're going to have that constant nagging at your mind thinking, okay, well, this might not count. This probably won't count. This doesn't mean anything anyway. And it's going to take a little fun away from it. So when do they punish people?
I honestly don't know. But going back to the Michigan State thing with the assistant coach, really, I don't even know if they can really get in trouble for that. It just depends on what he's done with the current players and how much Izzo knew about it, and they need to go ahead and fire him if that's the case. But as far as Sean Miller, you're right. He is going to get fired. Ayton's going to get suspended. And, of course, he's going to go on to the NBA anyway. And that's going to be the end of it. For the rest of them, I don't know. As you can see, Colin Sexton was in the probe as well, and Avery Johnson has already stated that he's going to play today. When we're not sure what's going to happen with the other players, who if they're going to suspend them or indefinitely, or sit them, or if they're questioning their eligibility or whatnot. Now, Avery Johnson feels as if they followed protocol earlier in the year and sat him for the opening game, and then he was cleared, but that appears to not be the case. And it's not just that. We just don't know, and it's almost too much in its infancy to really take any action right now.
And that's the weird part about it.
That's the odd part about it.
And because what we're doing is we're watching this happen, that this weird probe thing happen, and all this information come out of school, like Michigan State, and I got it right here in front of me. But at the same time, we're about to see them be a 2 seed and go and make a run in the tournament. Doesn't that do something for you when you're watching it? How are you going to look at Michigan State and the game they're playing? Does it stop you from getting excited from a fabulous finish? Because in the back of your mind, this might not even count anyway.
Absolutely not, because you're just watching the sport take place.
See, I can't help but think about what they've done and think that.
I mean, you will think about that, but that's not going to taint my excitement of a great game, is what I'm saying. Yeah, maybe. Oh yeah, well, all this stuff went on. That doesn't take away from the fact that somebody just hit a half court shot for the win, or whatever. That's not going to take that kind of excitement away from me. I guess the concerning thing as a fan, at least of Auburn. Coming in towards this, coming down here at season's end, is luckily they haven't been released in the FBI probe yet.
Other than the original one, and
they were in the, but they apparently took care of it. They fired Chuck Person, and they sat the two players who were in question.
Exactly.
Hopefully that's the last we see of it, and hopefully Bruce Pearl didn't know anything about it. Supposedly.
Yeah, that puts Auburn at an advantage, even though I know that's weird to say because they were involved in an FBI probe, but it happened before the season, so they were allowed to do damage control, which helps them out tremendously, especially if Bruce Pearl's not involved in this thing. But that's the big question, because for the majority of the season, he's refused to talk to his own university, who is trying to investigate internally. They're trying to do an investigation, and he finally spoke to the president a few weeks ago, but barely. I mean, it was very vague and very quick. So, you know, that's really concerning
to me.
That's
the real suspicious part about it, is that he's not cooperating with the university. Now, he could. This is probably secondary. I mean, you would assume that by that, naturally, that he probably knew something about it, if you're just hearing that face value. But underneath, you could also say, well, maybe he's trying to keep the focus on the floor and not try to distract, you know, the players and the fans and what he has built this year with the following that they've gotten, especially at home and just the season they've had. Maybe he doesn't want to, you know, bring any distractions away from that, but that could be secondary. He very well could have known about it, but we don't know. And a lot of it, I suppose, hinges on what Person says, you know, who knew about what I was doing and whatnot, right, and who else was involved and all that kind of thing. So we really don't know, and I guess that's something that's going to be shown after the season. I saw a couple articles. One person believes that Pearl's not going to last much longer after the end of the season. Of course, he was the same person that was ragging on Auburn and Cam Newton back in 2010, the same guy, I think, from Yahoo.
It's crazy that he's probably going to win Coach of the Year and get fired.
And I hope that it comes to pass.
About the Bruce Pearl hire, so I mean, that would hurt so bad.
Oh, I was thrilled at it, and I'm just hoping that it kind of, that it, I, here's, I read a different article, however, that said that it was from ESPN, and it was just in spot with everything going on in college basketball in general. Auburn is the perfect example of why fans should try to live in the moment. And it brought to light how a lot of fans of sports are always thinking in terms of what's going to happen down the road this season, what's going to happen next season, what's going to happen this, that, and the other. And with Auburn, with everything that went on at the beginning of the year, the season, the unbelievable season that has transpired, and how a lot of Auburn fans are trying not to think about, you know, the outside stuff and with what might go on with the team later, it's just great to just live in the moment, enjoy the fact that they're about to go to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 15 years, and just love it and enjoy it. And if whatever happens, Auburn is not supposed to be good at basketball. I've grown up in a time where Auburn has been notoriously terrible at basketball. So me yes, I'm going to be disappointed if he gets fired at the end of the season because of everything that he's worked to build over these last four seasons, and how I've already talked to some of my buddies about Auburn would, and you know that, well, I've said it before, Auburn would never recover from firing Bruce Pearl. The fans would hate the athletic director for firing him. They would hate everything that went on. They would, the half the players would transfer away, and the program would be burned into ashes and would never recover. However, I'm just going to enjoy the rest of this season. I can't be mad when they lose because of how great it's been. I'm just going to try, like the article said, just live in the moment and enjoy it. Enjoy watching them in the NCAA tournament, and whatever happens is going to happen at the end of the season.
Absolutely. It's a good idea. And another thing that this whole probe's done, which we can talk a lot about it, get to that point in just a second, but following on Malaysia's tweets, is that I would be nervous if my name was Sean Miller right now. The FBI doesn't screw around. Looking eye emoji. Well, yeah, I mean, Sean Miller's done for. Sean Miller is in a lot of trouble. He did apparently what the other guys got arrested for, right? And that was taking money, taking bribes to steer these players in certain directions, right? I mean, that's what these other guys got in trouble for. That's the illegal part. So Sean Miller has a very big chance of being in a lot of trouble.
So wait, did he try to – I thought he was offering money. I thought – did somebody pay him?
From what I saw,
that the phone conversation was him offering $100,000 to ensure that Ayton came to Arizona.
Well, I don't know if that's illegal as far as an FBI perspective. He's done for in college basketball. But I thought he was offered the money.
Oh, is that what it might have said that? I can't remember. I just looked. I saw wiretap $100,000.
I'm almost positive he was offered the money. I think. I don't know about Sean Miller dishing out $100,000, but I'd have to look it up. I really would, because the article I read was this new one that came out last night about all the assistant coaches. But here's the other thing that's really starting to come out. The conversation is being steered toward right now, and that is it time to start? Is it time to just sack up and start paying these guys? I mean.
Yeah, it was Miller discussed paying $100,000 to ensure DeAndre Ayton signed with Arizona.
I can't imagine that's I don't know how that's going to stack over well with the FBI, but that he's obviously done for in college basketball. That's going to nab him big time in college basketball. But I mean, hey, we can always ask Charles Tillman. I mean, Charles Tillman just became an FBI agent yesterday on his birthday, so you can always ask that guy, Mr. Peanut Punch. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did.
But, Aaron, here's the important thing, the important question that's going to start floating around. Is it time to pay these guys? Because it's been made very clear that the culture around college basketball is paying these players to play for a year. That's what it is. They're going to go to the NBA. The only thing keeping them in college for a year is the fact that they have to go there. I mean, they could sit out a year. The rule is you have to just be out of high school a year before you go to the NBA. And why not go to college basketball? So, the only thing stopping them is the rule. The culture since before they were born, apparently, is that one way or the other, whether it's official or not, you're going to get paid to play college basketball. I don't know one way or the other what's right or wrong here about paying these guys. But all I know is, what I do know is, if you don't, then you're just going to keep getting in trouble. And if it's not made official to pay these guys, it's not going to stop. I mean, they're still going to find ways to illegally do things and get these players, because that's the only way they can do it. College basketball players will start finding another way to go other places. And then these programs will start to get destroyed and destroyed and destroyed, and the product of college basketball is going to fall big time. But the big problem, the fundamental problem I have with paying players is this, is changing the rule because everybody's breaking it. You know what I mean? I'm not in favor of that at all. I don't like saying, well, we concede because we can't stop you guys from breaking this rule, so we're just going to get rid of this rule and pay you guys, which would open up a whole can of everything else. But just that fundamental basis, I don't like that at all. This is a rule, you follow it. If you want the rule to go away, we have a serious discussion. And obviously those serious discussions aren't going anywhere. They're going in the favor of the NCAA of not paying these kids. But now it's looking like, okay, well, you're not going to officially pay these kids. We'll find a way to get them to come to our school. And that way is to get them money some one way or the other. And that's exactly what's happening, and that's against the rules. So now a lot of people are wanting them to say, hey, you know what? Just pay the kids. They deserve to be paid anyway. Pay them. The problem with that is, if you're the NCAA, is you have to say, you know what? You're right. We had a rule, and you guys refused to follow it. So we're going to reward you for breaking the rules. I cannot get behind that fundamental flaw. I can't do it.
It also just takes away, I feel like it takes away partially from the sanctity of college sports.
Well, it takes away the thought of amateurism sports.
There's no ending amateurism.
Which, it's been over for a while, but now we're starting to see it come to an end, officially.
Just officially, and I did not want, you know, college players to end up getting paid. But it's just the way that it's going to have to go. And
exactly. I don't see another way.
I don't see another way either. And my dad was telling me yesterday about an article that he read about, he believes, of course, you should pay the players and you should pay them what they're worth. And that depends on, you know, some of them are only going to be worth a full ride scholarship and some are going to be worth that plus $100,000 more, depending. And yeah, it's not fair, but you got to pay them what they're worth. That's what they do in the Olympics. You get paid by how much, like, you're worth in the Olympics. And that, and if a agency wants to pay this player so much money to sign with them when they're done, let them do it. You know, I don't know how much I agree with it, and I just that might be the only way to stop it. I said the other day on this show that one way to limit it, I think, would be to get rid of the one and done rule.
Yeah.
But that won't get rid of it. They'll still find ways to. Yeah, a lot of the big ones will still jump, but that next tier, they'll still go out and pay those kids.
Absolutely. They're going to compensate them. Look, I know you just made a 3-year commitment. We'll make it worth your while.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not going to. This is the only way it's got to go. And, like, I agree 100% with Jay Billis, and I've said it before that I think that obviously it goes on in football, too. It's just a matter of when you get caught doing it. Ever to compete at any level of college sports at the high level, at least with football and basketball, you got to pay the kids. You've got to. There's no way that Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are sitting back clean as a whistle just because they're great. Yes, they're great football coaches. But I would go as far to say is, well, here's, and yes, it's an example. It's an example to use. You see all these kids from so far away in different states coming to, like, why in the world did, like, for example, Cameron Artis Payne, when he came to Auburn, he was from, like, New Hampshire or something. Why would Tua Tagovailoa from Hawaii go to Alabama for any reason whatsoever to really think really think about it, folks? And I'm not just saying that because I'm an Auburn fan. I'm saying that. Think about that for a second.
I don't know that that's too much of an issue anymore. I think if you're going to look at, like, programs like that, you look at when they started, like, you know what I mean? Like, Saban's been successful for so long that if he ever did anything wrong, he wouldn't have to continue doing it now. I mean, the players are going to want to go play for him because they know that's where you go to get in the NFL. I mean, that's where you know that you're going to get the best out of your talent. If anything, it started back when he first started. I'm not saying it did, but in my opinion, that's when it would have had to have been.
But if you're going to do it, then you got to keep it up. And
I don't know about that because they've been so good and he's so good at coaching that it's not just – football is different than basketball. In order of football, if you're really good at football, you don't just go there and be really good. You still have to develop a lot. Basketball, if you're good, you're good. You know what I mean?
Of course, there still develops that goes along with that because
you develop in the NBA more than you do in college because you only play a year. So it's a little different. And Nick Saban's like, fine, if you want to go somewhere and do something illegal and get paid and don't want to come to a program that apparently I'm all of a sudden running clean, then go ahead. We'll meet you in whatever game you want to play in, and we're going to beat you the right way. So that's what I just think he doesn't have to do that.
I think that it goes on at every major college. I think that every major – if you want to compete – like I said, if you want to try to compete at a high level – in college, in any college, at the two major college sports in basketball and football, that you have to pay players. I mean, I think that Auburn. I think Auburn does it. I think Alabama does it. I think Ohio State may not be to this ridiculous extent that we're seeing in college basketball, but it does go on because you hear stories from way back when Bear Bryant and Pat Dye were paying players way back when. I just think they still do it to the extent. I don't know, but
I know.
I think that one reason that it's not come out, that people have not. It has not come out in college football to the extent it has in basketball. It's because college football is the moneymaker. Yeah. They don't want anything. The NCAA and
I will tell you this right
and
now.
And the networks don't want anything to taint the billion dollar industry that is college football.
I'll tell you
football.
This right now. There's you can almost find no more pride in a sport than the pride of the South in college football. So if there were to be an FBI probe and the popular schools in the South, like the SEC, were getting hit, there would be another civil war. That's all there is to it right there. The South would rise again. That would be the reason the South rises again right there, if you put an FBI probe on Southeastern Conference football. But before we take a quick break, we got to get to one. The pipe dream for me of players getting paid, I want to see them get paid. It would work way better in football than it would college basketball, I would assume, is getting paid off their likeness. Bring the NCAA games back. Allow the players to get paid off that. Allow them to get paid off what kind of revenue they're bringing in. If people are buying their jersey, allow them to have a share of that. But to pay them just to come play football or just to come play the sport because I still believe in amateurism football and amateurism basketball, even though it's not happening, I want to believe in that. I can't get behind saying, hey, if you come here, this is basically your salary you get for playing. I don't like that, but I like players making money off of what the revenue they're bringing in. I think that's fair 100%. But I know you want to weigh in now on that. We'll get to that on the other side of the break. Tony Mack and the Triplett, 730, 1039, The Ump.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039, The Ump. WUMP.
Welcome back, like Tony Mack at the Triplett on this now all of a sudden sunny Saturday morning. Well, there is a big cloud hanging over college basketball. Aaron and I were just discussing the FBI probe going on and the amateurism and eventually leading to paying players. And something I was telling you off the break, Aaron, I'm willing to concede. My dream is to have these players make money off their likeness and the revenue they're bringing in. But what they want is to basically get paid a salary for playing there. And because that's what in basketball these agents are doing, basically they're paying them a one year payment to play at this school, and that's the standard for them now. So that's what they want going forward. And honestly, I because I believe that college athletics should be amateur athletics, I don't want to see that happen. But if it means I get to keep college football and I get to keep college basketball, do it. I'm conceding. Do it. I won't like it, but I like having the sport way more than just being prideful. So I concede. Do it.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any other way around it. That's just the way I'm looking at it. I didn't want it to happen. I don't think it's right, but it's the only way to stop it from happening under the table, because it's going, regardless of what they, if they drop the hammer, fine, but if they don't change the rule, it's still going to happen. It's not going to matter.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. And let's talk about the other way that they punish these guys real quick. I know I brought it up in the Louisville update, but the stupidest punishment you can do in college is take away their wins. That means nothing. The real punishment is making them pay back all that money, and the real punishment is taking away scholarships and things of that nature, because a punishment is to make it harder on a team that did something wrong to be successful. A punishment is punishing a team that did something wrong. The way to do that is to make it harder on them than the average team to be successful. And the way to do that is you take away scholarships, you fine them, you put them on probation, maybe a postseason ban if it's significant. But that's how you punish somebody. You have to make it harder on them than it is the average team to be successful. Taking away wins does nothing. We watched that. So you're telling me Kevin Ware breaking his leg never happened? Tell him, because I'm sure he'll be ecstatic about that. Yeah, you know that game you shattered your leg? The game your bone of your leg came straight through your skin? You had a big they call that a compound fracture, right? Remember that game you had a compound fracture because you were out there busting your butt for this program and the game you love so much? Yeah, remember that? That doesn't count. That didn't count. That win doesn't count anymore, Kevin. Sorry about it. It doesn't count. That means nothing. We saw that game. We saw the national championship game against Michigan. Louisville won that game. Whether it's been vacated or not, they won that game. You're not going to go up to Peyton Siva if you see him on the road. I'm sure you're going to see him walking around the street. But if you saw Peyton Siva and you walked up to him, that was his first name, right? I think it was Peyton Siva. If you walk up to him and you were like, "Hey, you're Peyton Siva. You're the 2013 national champion." You think he's going to be like, no, they vacated that. Remember, I'm not a national champion anymore. No!
It's not like they go in, they go to every single player and take their rings away from them.
Exactly. They make you take the banner down.
It's ridiculous. I just think it is.
It's pointless. They won the
so
game,
pointless.
Whether it's in a record book or not. I guarantee you ESPN's not going to take the box score down.
And I mean, the NCAA just does that to be like, ha! At the end of the day, that's all they want to do. They want to get the last laugh, and because there's nothing else they can do. There's absolutely nothing else they can do besides that. And the only thing they do, that's the only thing they can do as punishment to affect that team is to vacate.
It's,
and it's ridiculous.
It's a feel-good thing for the NCAA. It makes them feel like they're doing something. They're not doing anything.
Like when they vacated USC's championship in 2004, and then technically because Reggie Bush played in the national championship against Texas, Texas still won the national championship, but that game really didn't happen. According to the NCAA, it really basically any contest that USC was involved in didn't happen.
Three or four generations from now, when kids look back and they're like, "Hey, who won the 2013 national championship or the 2005 Heisman Trophy? Was it the 05 Trophy, 04, 05?
05.
Who won the 05 Heisman Trophy? I don't know. Look it up. It says it was vacated, but they took it away from Reggie Bush. So Reggie Bush won it. They're still going to know that Reggie Bush won. They just, the NCAA doesn't consider him the winner. Doesn't mean we don't.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't change in our minds of the fans anything. If they were to take away,
it's a feel good punishment for the NCAA. It makes them feel good about themselves. And you know something else? If they're going to tell us the games didn't count, if they're going to tell the people, think about this, Aaron. Everybody who went those years to Louisville games in the tournament, they paid to travel and then they paid to get in the stadium. They paid the enormous prices to get in the national championship game. I'll tell you this much: if that game didn't count, if you're telling those fans they paid all that money to go see a game that didn't count, pay them back. Pay the fans back. Give them their money.
I will say this. It does. I could see how as a player or as a fan of that particular school that it would sting a little bit to have that technically taken away. But at the same time, it's not going to take away the feeling that I had.
Yeah.
If I was on that team or if I was a fan of that team, it's not going to take away the feeling that I had after winning.
And I would think the same way. I used to think the same way about the players. It might take a little something away, but now I really don't think so. And here's why. Because the perception of winning the national championship is with the fans. Louisville won that national championship according to the fans. According to the NCAA, it did not. What means more to the player, the NCAA or the fans? The only reason the players are even playing for the NCAA is because of the money they're getting, or in Louisville's case, the strippers they were getting, not because they want to play for the NCAA. They wanted to get paid, and they love the fans. The fans' perception matters way more than the NCAA. So as long as the fans, like we do, consider them national champions, they don't care. And they shouldn't, because it's a stupid punishment. Yeah, man, we're going to take a... It didn't count. If I'm Kevin Ware, you have a legitimate reason to be like, really? Come on. But you hit him in the wallet. That's the real punishment in this whole thing. They made a big deal about, we took away 123 wins, two Final Four, back-to-back Final Fours, and your national championship. They don't count anymore. Also, you're going to have to pay us back. That's the big punishment. You hit him in the wallet. That hurts. Yeah, and I believe they're on probation, some scholarships as well. That hurts. That's not allowing them to be as good as the average team. They have to try harder and actually put in more work to be as good as the average team is allowed to be. That's a punishment. taking away wins that already happened that we saw with our own eyes is not. It's stupid. And the reason why I'm so animated about this is the NCAA thinks they're getting something done by doing that. That's the lead story. That's what they lead with. We took away their wins. It doesn't count. Also, we fined them. We took away some scholarships, but they didn't win. So what? Just because you think they didn't win doesn't mean anything. You think that you're doing that. And we're sitting here looking at the NCAA. Yeah, you got them. You got them. Good job. We're laughing behind their back. It's not even behind their back anymore.
As if we'll all forget about that. Exactly. That year. Oh, my goodness.
It's silly.
It's a joke. I think vacating wins is the dumbest
ridiculous
punishment that ever could have been invented. It's because they have nothing else to punish with, because they just want to find some way to punish a team for stuff that they finally were able to dig up 5 years after the fact. That's the only way you can punish them, is by doing that. And that's what they choose to do. Yeah, take scholarships, take some. Yeah, that's the worst part. That's the worst part of the punishment, but it's just to get a last laugh. It's ridiculous.
It is really stupid. We're going to have to take a quick break really quick, and we'll come back for the last one. A quick break really quick. Yeah, that was good. We'll be right back here on Tony Mac and the Triplet, 730, 1039, The Ump.
Sports Radio, The Ump, because we care.
Gunter's Landing is one of the Tennessee Valley's finest golf experiences. In 2017, Gunter's Landing was ranked the number 2 course to play in Alabama, ranked number 14 in the U.S. for staff friendliness, and ranked number 18 in the U.S. for value by Golf Advisor. Just 25 minutes from downtown Huntsville, Gunter's Landing's 18-hole championship jewel is open to the public Tuesday through Sunday, located in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, with beautiful Lake Guntersville vistas around every corner. A golf experience like no other. Gunter's Landing is golf the way nature intended. Gunter's Landing is offering golf memberships starting at $2,500 for new members, which includes unlimited golf, cart, range balls, par 3 practice area, and preferred tee times. Gunter's Landing would like to welcome the Stephen DeBoer Golf Academy. Call 256-582-3000 or visit their website at gutterslandinggolf.com to book your tee time or more information.
Opportunities present themselves every day. Opportunities that move us forward. Opportunities to serve part-time in your community while continuing their full-time careers or education to help keep our nation safe at home and around the globe. Explore your opportunities in the Air Force Reserve.
If your skin could talk, would you listen?
As your skin, I forgive you. I forgive you for poking and popping me when I broke out at 14. I forgive you for that awful belly ring hole you left in me when you were 15. I forgive you for damaging me before prom, on spring break, and at tanning salons when you were 16, 17, 18. But I'm your skin, and if you continue to tan, I hope you can forgive me. Forgive me when wrinkles begin to show and I start developing age spots. Forgive me if I develop melanoma when you're only 22. So please, I'm asking you to stop. Stop tanning now. Our future depends on it.
Protect your skin from melanoma, the second most common cancer in young women 15 to 29 years old. And protect your future. Learn more at spotskincancer.org. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
An important message from Medicare. Between your doctor visits, taking the right medications at the right times, and following advice from different doctors, managing two or more chronic conditions, like high blood pressure, arthritis, or diabetes, can be overwhelming. But it doesn't have to be. Chronic Care Management Services can help you get the connected care you need by connecting the dots between your medical appointments, pharmacy, and hospital visits. Your doctor will work with you to create a care plan and check in with you between visits, keeping you on track and helping you with your health goals so you can spend more time doing what you love. If you have Medicare, ask your doctor about Chronic Care Management Services
and get the connected care you need. For more information, visit Medicare.gov and search for Chronic Care Management. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back. Tony Mack in the Triple. One last segment here. Really quick one before we send you off to some college basketball this morning. And coincidentally enough, that's what we're going to talk about. We're not going to talk about this probe anymore. We are going to talk about the local teams because that's what we need to do around here. And I don't know if you guys have heard or not, but Auburn's pretty good this year. They're pretty good. They are taking on Florida in Gainesville tonight. This one, I believe if they win this one, then they'll just need to win one more to wrap up the SEC regular season title because they're still two games ahead of Tennessee. If they win this one, and there's three games left. So if they win the next two, they lock it up regardless of what Tennessee does. So Aaron, chances at Florida, the chances that Florida can take down Auburn in Gainesville, how likely would you consider them? I know Chioza is really good, but I'm not buying it at all.
Well, Florida's two-point favorites at home for a reason. They've got a talented team that's just been kind of trending down. Auburn proved, though, against Alabama, they were so shorthanded down to seven scholarship players that they can get wins. And Jared Harper is more and more looking like the SEC Player of the Year and the most important player on Auburn's team. As long as he's playing, they can beat anybody. So I think if he plays well, Auburn wins.
And Auburn's a good road team. I mean, they lost at Alabama, and the South Carolina one was the only real weird road loss. But they're a fantastic road team, and
had a lot going on in that game with coming off a win, and then the McLemore injury as well.
They can do it all over the place. I mean, they've been doing it without two of their three best players all year. Mustafa Heron, that third best player, was gone. Anthony McLemore gone for the season, and then you had Bryce Brown hobbling on a bruised foot, and they still won. Against a really talented Alabama team. So they're going to beat Florida. Florida should not be favored. We'll see you guys next week. Stay tuned.
We interrupt your program to bring you this special presentation of live play-by-play action on the Ump. Coverage of NCAA basketball starts now.